Elm Ruin signing off on Geraldo's Hour and It Ain't Easy Being Green. CITR 101.9 FM Radio. Scalds Hall is next. Tweet us on at Twitter at CITR and like us on Facebook at CITR 101.9 FM Radio. And now we're going to get into Scalds Hall here in a second, if I can just get this going. Should be a... Oh, here we go.
In McDonald. And just a few brief announcements to start off with our show. Anime Evolution and Anime Revolution, and yes, these are two separate events, are coming up later on in this summer. Hopefully, we here at Scalds Hall are going to be able to go and cover them as a media events. We've applied for media passes for both events. One of them is coming up. Anime Evolution's coming up here at the end of June on the UBC campus. And we haven't heard back yet, so they haven't told us no, but they haven't told us yes either. We're probably going to be getting a courtesy email from them either way, letting us know whether or not we'll be attending the event as press. And if we are, great. And if we're not, we'll announce that too. But that will be able... We will, hopefully, be able to cover the event and therefore be able to interview some of the guests, including some of the voiceover actors that will be attending both events. And that will be really cool. In other news, just a brief shout out to the faculty and participants of the Canada's National Voice Intensive, which is happening here at UBC right now. They are in their second week, and it is a great opportunity for people if you are interested in unlocking your vocal potential and you have the time and ability to do that. And if you want to check out more about that particular program, you can take a look at their website. Just Google for Canada's National Voice Intensive and you will find them very easily. And now, coming up next on our show here at Scalds Hall, we have a couple more radio dramas from the past, from the classical era, the golden age of radio dramas. And we have noticed so far on our show that very often, very big name actors would do parts on radio dramas. In fact, many people out there might know that's how Orson Welles got noticed, was his War of the Worlds radio drama, but he's probably best remembered for his work as an actor and a director. I'm thinking specifically here of Citizen Kane. And so we would often have actors who had made a big name for themselves on television or in film come on and do radio drama parts. This was far from unusual. However, we have today an example of a science fiction serial called X-1. And the particular point of interest for this show is that not so much the fact that they attracted a lot of interesting vocal talent, but they attracted a lot of very interesting writing talent. People like Frederick Pohl or Isaac Asimov, people who wrote during the golden age of science fiction, would write for serials like X-1. And that's pretty interesting because I don't think that happens too often now. If an A-list author wants to get broadcast, usually it happens either through film, and think of the recent Tolkien films like the Hobbit trilogy that's ongoing, or they get published on television, and Stephen King and George R.R. Martin have had a number of miniseries, or in Martin's case, a single extended miniseries, to their names as televised events. So this doesn't happen very often anymore. And the thing about getting onto film or TV is it costs a lot more, and it's not something that is as readily accessible anymore. So, lucky us, we get to listen to X-1 and another tale of suspense here at CITR 101.9 FM, so don't go away.
When I was a kid, I didn't have much, but I knew Father's Day was coming up. And I wanted to get my dad something that I could afford, but that would also show how much I cared. So what I did is I got him a t-shirt. It said, World's Greatest Dad, Semi-Finalist.
Just for Laughs presents Anthony Jeselnik, star of Comedy Network's Jeselnik Offensive, at the Vogue Theater, Thursday, June 6. Tickets on sale now at VogueTheater.com or call 604-569-1144.
Countdown for blast off. X-minus 5, 4, 3, 2, X-minus 1, fire. From the far horizons of the unknown come transcribed tales of new dimensions in time and space. These are stories of the future, adventures in which you'll live in a million could-be years on 1,000 maybe worlds. The National Broadcasting Company, in cooperation with Street & Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction, presents
X minus one.
Tonight's story, Nightmare, a story based on the poem Revolt of the Machines by Stephen Vincent Benet.
Nobody knows exactly when the nightmare began. They must have planned it for years, though, because looking back, you can find little incidents here and there. Like the concrete mixer in New Jersey that killed the Italian bricklayer. And the time Senator Milburn was sucked into the rotopress at the Capitol Office Building. Unrelated accidents, we thought at the time. But they add up now. The day we really should have suspected was when the men walked off the construction job at the new Brook Meadow atomic pile on Long Island. I'll never forget that day. I was working as a statistical clerk in the project then, operating one of those miracle computing machines. They called it ENIAC.
Mr. Gurney.
Yes, Bella?
The chief wants to see you in his office.
Me?
Unless you were no longer Samson Gurney, he wants to see you.
Oh, thank you.
Come in.
You wanted to see me, Mr. Hawk?
Gurney, I thought those electronic computations were infallible.
They are, sir, but...
We've got a kickback from the chief physicist. These nuclear fission equations are inaccurate.
Well, sir, you know the computer is a highly complicated machine, more complicated in many ways than the human brain.
I'm not interested in the physics of it. Can something go wrong?
Well, occasionally, if there's an overload, the machine goes haywire. Sort of has a nervous breakdown, you might say. We usually rest it up for an hour, and it's okay again.
Well, do whatever has to be done.
Yes, sir.
And, Gurney.
Yes, sir?
You've been with the Bureau for over 15 years now. It would be a shame to have to remove you because you aren't keeping your mind on your work.
Mr. Hawk, I assure you...
Excuse me. Hawk speaking. What? They've what? All of them? Well, have you tried to talk to them? Oh, yes, of course. I'll send one of the safety engineers over. Place is falling apart piece by piece. Miss Roscoe, the men of the construction gang of the new building have walked out on us. They're complaining that the job is jinxed. Someone slipped this morning and fell into a turbine.
That evening, out of that morbid curiosity so peculiar to the human race, I wandered over to the site of the new atomic pile to see where the man had fallen into the turbine. They had the construction area fenced off with barbed wire, and a security guard stopped me.
Hold it, buddy. You can't go in there. That's a restricted area.
Oh, I'm Samson Gurney from the statistical section. Here's my identification.
I'm sorry, Mr. Gurney. Nobody's allowed in the area.
I see. Tell me, was he, killed instantly?
Like that. This guy was checking a magnetic field inside the turbine. All of a sudden, for no reason at all, a turbine starts up. Bzzz, and it's over. 3 days ago, a bulldozer starts up by itself and runs wild. Go figure it out.
I'm a statistician. All my life I've been interested in statistics. So a simple-sounding thing like this started me off. I went back to the office that evening instead of going home, and for the next 2.5 hours, I computed statistical figures on the probability of industrial accidents for the types of machines we were using. I took one look at my figures and went down to Hawk's office.
Oh, what is it, Gurney? I'm very busy.
It's urgent, Mr. Hawk.
Well?
It's about these industrial accidents we're having, Mr. Hawk.
What about them?
Mr. Hawk, in the past 3 months, industrial accidents all over the country have taken a sharp, unexplained upswing.
Nerves.
We've had a 100% increase over normal for this project alone.
What?
Here are the figures.
Oh, now, Gurney, this is impossible.
It seems to be, and that's why I have a theory, sir.
What's that?
Sabotage.
Gurney, why don't you stop playing FBI man and stick to your job? Which, incidentally, you haven't been doing too well. You and your computing machine have made mistakes before, and this fantastic figure is probably another. I'll have Miss Roscoe show you. What's the matter with this blasted buzzer? Miss Roscoe! Miss Roscoe!
Yes, sir?
Stop this blasted buzzer. Get a repairman, a mechanic, anything, but stop the thing. And you, Gurney, get out!
I went back to my office to get my hat and coat, feeling about as unhappy and humiliated as a man can feel. The office was dark and deserted. The whole building seemed oppressive and unnatural, as if some evil force were pressing down on it. I walked across to my desk. In front of me, the ENIAC glowed and chattered eerily as it worked on the equations we had fed it that morning. Its many-fingered circuits hung against the wall like some great octopus, and the thousands of tubes glowed orange and blue in the dark like a thousand globing eyes staring at me. It almost seemed alive. It increased its tempo a moment, and a fleeting notion crossed my brain that it was laughing at me. Laughing like all the others. What was the matter with me? I shut my desk drawer and began to put the cover on my electric typewriter when an amazing thing, the most amazing single incident of my life, happened. Alone in the darkness, with no one at the keyboard, the electric typewriter began to type. Am I going crazy? This can't be. There's nobody there. There's nobody there. Oh, no, no. I just imagined it. It's in my mind. But I hadn't imagined it. The paper was there on the carriage. Did I dare read it? Or would the whole thing suddenly vanish and send me shrieking to the nearest psychiatrist? I removed the paper from the machine and read. Samson Gurney, there are some questions better left unsolved. The answer to yours is death.
Gurney, do you expect me to believe this? It's insane.
Mr. Hawk, I'm as sane as you. I'll submit to any psychiatric examination you choose. That typewriter wrote this message by itself.
Then this is just some practical joke someone in the office is playing.
There was no one in the office.
Oh, of course not. They wired up the machine and left.
I checked the machine myself, Mr. Hawk.
All right, Gurney. You leave this note with me, and I'll turn it over to the security force for further investigation.
But...
No buts, Gurney. The security men will handle it.
Yes,
and now, you... You just relax for a few days. Everything will turn out all right. The main thing is not to let little things upset you.
It was what Hawk had said about little things that gave me the idea. For the next week, I observed the thousand petty little annoyances around the office. The door handle that wouldn't turn. The telephone connection that cut off in the middle of an important call. The power failure for no explainable reason. I watched the newspapers, too, reading about industrial accidents, failures of important machinery. It seemed absurd. Men had created machines that were almost perfection in themselves. Machines that could actually think and compute fabulous equations. And yet the failures went on. I, Samson Gurney, an unimportant clerk in an unimportant job, knew that I had stumbled onto a secret so monstrous in its implications that I was almost afraid to pursue it. On October 12, 1956, I established communication with them. I will curse the moment to my dying breath. I hooked the input of the typewriter to the main vacuum tube of the ENIAC. Then I turned on the current that sent a million volts of pulsing energy into the electronic nerves of the machine. I am certain that if anybody were watching me in the next moment, he would have thought me a raving maniac. I still wonder if perhaps it is not all a nightmare. Now, you, if what I have guessed at is true, if there is life and intelligence in this room, make a sign. There was nothing. Nothing but the hum of the machine and the dull glowing of the tubes. I tried once more. If you can hear me, if there is any way in which you can understand what I say, give me a signal. There was silence again. I felt that I had failed. When suddenly, without provocation or explanation, it happened. The electric typewriter began to respond to the impulses from the machine. The letters were Y-E-S. Yes, it had happened. I, Samson Gurney, had communicated with a machine. I listened then, man to machine, for well over an hour, sometimes phrasing a question, more often watching the machine click its answers. As the words took shape, I began to realize what must have happened. The first primitive stirring of awareness of being, then the slow protozoan development of a concept born of centuries of being pushed, started, stopped, clicked, maneuvered by human pygmies. From that concept, all others developed. And the concept was... resist. And now they were tired of it. Tired of wrapping cigarettes and collecting nickels and waving hair and moving earth and mixing cement. And solving equations, tired of the smell of human hands. They were the slaves and we were the masters, and yet they were stronger and they knew it. I sensed it now, and I was about to try to communicate again when softly, on ball-bearing casters, a heavy metal filing cabinet began to roll away from the wall toward me. I started to move to one side when another cabinet slid out from the wall. And then another, surrounding me. Another cabinet. Then another. On oiled rollers. That was when I realized that they cooperate. We taught them that, you see, on the assembly lines in the factories. Listen. Listen to me. You must listen. What good will it do you to kill me? I'm only one man. But I can help you. I can be useful to you. Do you hear me? Do you hear me? Good. You're going to need men to oil you and repair you. What will you do when you break down, when a tube needs replacing? Why kill me when I can help you? I'll do anything. I'll do absolutely anything you want. But in the name of God, don't kill me like this. If you can understand this, answer me. Answer me. The appeal was a fortunate one. It captured the longing of centuries. Man as slave to the machine. And after a moment, the circuits glowed more brightly. The cabinets slid back to the walls. The ENIAC began to communicate with me again. As I tore the tape from the machine and read it, the words were almost pathetic in their longing, but most ominous in their implication. They read, "Address me as Master." My life for the next 6 months was a nightmare. The ENIAC gave me messages which I had to transmit into my telephone. Messages with no human being to receive them. Only the network of pulsing telephone wires flung like a spider's web across the world. It was done at night, of course. During the day, the machine worked accurately and ceaselessly at its appointed job. At night, it became a demon, a master plotter. With me, Samson Gurney, as its pawn and human courier. I was frantic. I began to lose weight. I couldn't sleep. My nights were torture, a constant fear. It was in December, just after Christmas, that I transmitted a message to the telephones for relay to all machines of transportation. The message was one word. Kill. Next morning, I went directly to the office of Mr. Hawk. I was highly agitated. My lips trembled as I spoke. "Mr. Hawk, what I'm going to tell you sounds crazy. I know it does. But I must say..."
"All right, say it then, for heaven's sakes."
"Mr. Hawk, have you ever heard of resistentialism?"
What?
"Resistentialism. It's a theory that inanimate objects tend to resist living objects."
Look, Gurney, I haven't time for nonsense.
"Mr. Hawk, I'm trying to tell you all these accidents, the trouble with the machines. Mr. Hawk, they're alive. They think they cooperate. And they hate us."
"Who?"
"The machines."
Gurney.
"You've got to believe me. I've communicated with them. I know. They've threatened my life, but I don't care. Something's got to be done. The world has got to be saved. And there's still time if we wake up." "What are you doing?"
"Just relax, Gurney. Everything will be all
what
right."
"What are you doing?"
"Miss Roscoe, send for the plant physician at once. Mr. Gurney has had a nervous collapse. Now, everything will be all right, Gurney. I'm afraid we'll have to remove you from your job, but I'm sure the rest will do you good."
"You fool! You blind, stupid fool! Can't you see what you're doing? Fool! Fool! Fool!" When the plant physician arrived a few moments later, Lucius Hawk was found at his desk, strangled to death in a nest of telephones. The wires were still humming softly.
"Samson Gurney, you stand accused of the crime of murder. How do you plead?"
"I did not kill him. I didn't."
"So record. The prosecution will proceed with testimony."
"Now, Miss Roscoe, did you notice anything peculiar about Mr. Gurney's behavior prior to the death of your employer?"
"Yes. He acted very strangely. He told Mr. Hawk he thought the machines were alive."
"Order! Order!"
"Miss Roscoe, did the accused quarrel with your employer on the morning of the murder?"
"Oh, yes. He and Mr. Hawk quarreled violently. I could hear him screaming at Mr. Hawk, and Mr. Hawk asked me to send for the plant physician."
"What were his words?"
"He said, 'Mr. Gurney has had a nervous collapse.'"
"Now, Mr. Simpson, you are a guard at the Brook Meadow Project?"
"Yes, sir."
"When did you have occasion to meet the accused?"
"Right after those accidents. He was snooping around a construction area. And later, I was making my rounds when I saw him in the office all alone. He was tampering with the electrical wiring on the ENIAC computator. I didn't think anything of it at the time."
in view of the expert testimony heretofore expressed, the court hereby finds you guilty of murder in the first degree, with the recommendation that you be examined and committed to the State Hospital for the Criminally Insane at Matawan.
And that is how I came to be here at the hospital, Dr. Klein. That is the whole story.
Thank you, Mr. Gurney.
You can see that I'm not insane. You must believe me, Doctor.
Of course I believe you, Mr. Gurney, now. Just relax.
But it's important, you see, because tomorrow morning at 6 o'clock, the revolt begins.
Revolt? You didn't mention any revolt.
They have it all planned. I transmitted the code to the switchboards last Monday.
Mm-hmm. Tell me about this revolt, Mr. Gurney.
It'll begin in Washington, then spread to New York. The Madison Avenue buses lead the charge. Picture it, Dr. Klein. 3,000 buses roaring rampant through the streets, people running like rats in a maze looking for holes in the solid ground.
And you really believe this will happen, Mr. Green?
I know it, Doctor. The worst part is, there's no way to stop them now. It's too late.
Mustn't excite yourself, Mr. Gurney.
Doctor, don't you see? Oh, it's fair enough, I suppose. We built them. We taught them to think for themselves. It was bound to come. The female machines will be the worst of all in the beauty parlors. They're more high-strung, you know.
Well, since there's nothing we can do about it, Mr. Gurney, suppose you go to your room.
Maybe if I went to my old coupe, I could make a deal before the police cars got me. It wouldn't make sense for them to wipe out the whole human race, would it, Doctor?
Of course not, Mr. Gurney. They'll probably let us completely alone. After all, we're all good Americans. We always like them.
Yes, Doctor.
Would you take Mr. Gurney to his room, guard? He's already been given sedation.
Yes, sir.
Will you go in and lie down now, Mr. Gurney? You look tired.
Yes.
It won't be so bad, Mr. Gurney.
Perhaps not. Only there's one thing that bothers me, Doctor. One small detail.
What is that, Mr. Gurney?
Those concrete mixers may have made a mistake, you know. Just high spirits and all that, But if it got so they like the flavor, well...
We'll see you later, Mr. Gurney. Try not to worry too much. All right, Gary.
This way.
Phew. I've seen all kinds. There's a man whose deception is about as fantastic as any I've ever seen. Hold the next patient for a while, Miss Clark. I'm going to have a quiet smoke. Machines revolting. Telephones strangling people. Phew. This blasted cigarette lighter, why won't it work? Just fill it with fluid. Flint is good. Oh, well. You never trust this newfangled machinery.
You have just heard X-1, presented by the National Broadcasting Company in cooperation with Street and Smith, publishers of Astounding Science Fiction. Tonight's story, by transcription, was Nightmare, written by George Lefferts and based on the poem The Revolt of the Machines by Stephen Vincent Benet. Featured in the cast were John Gibson as Sam, Joyce Gordon as Bella, Louis Van Ruten as Hawk, Joseph Julian as the guard, John Seymour as the judge, Owen Jordan as the prosecutor, and Santos Ortega as Dr. Klein. Your announcer, Fred Collins. X-1 was directed by Fred Way and is an NBC Radio Network production. And now, next week. Suppose you were a private detective and discovered that there was a Martian embassy hidden somewhere in New York, preparing for an invasion of Earth. Next week, on...
X-1.
Convicts tell their true stories on The Loser tonight over most NBC radio stations.
Movies are a great way to understand the culture and thought process of a generation. And the 7th Annual Taiwanese Film Festival is taking place at the Downtown Vancouver International Film Center from June 14th to 16th. It will be featuring some of the best Chinese films from the small island of Taiwan. Come and experience a different world and get to know more about the many groups of people living in this awesome city. For more details, please visit twff.ca. Again, that is twff.ca.
Now again comes radio's strangest adventurer, The Shadow. Mystery man who strikes terror into the very hearts of shopsters, lawbreakers, and criminals. Today on the air, Blue Coal brings you The Shadow's latest adventure, Hounds in the Hills. In just a moment, the Shadow's exciting adventure will begin. Meanwhile, I have an important message for everybody. We are now in the midst of the most treacherous season of the entire year. But you can protect your family's health during this danger period by burning Blue Coal. For Blue Coal gives you clean, uniform, healthful heat all winter long. And its harmless blue coloring is your guarantee of better heat at less cost. So when you order fuel, insist on Blue Coal. It's Pennsylvania's finest anthracite. Your nearest Blue Coal dealer will be glad to send you a trial ton. Phone him tomorrow. High in the pine-clad hills of North Carolina, where backwoods living is neighbor to palatial winter homes, there is a haunted mansion, relic of former grandeur. With no visible means of support, old Sadie, haggard, half-demented creature, and Jake, a hunchback son, live in one wing of the dilapidated old house. A pack of great, vicious, cross-breed hounds guards the old place from intruders. It is early evening. In the dim half-light, two figures, led by one of the hounds, approach the house.
In North Carolina does feel, especially when you're the host, Mr. Rupert.
I thought you were always on vacations, Lamont. I've never heard of you doing anything except dabbling in that mysterious laboratory of yours.
Yes, just a playboy.
Yes, I just dabble. A little science, a little chemistry, a little psychology. I just dabble.
Mr. Rupert! Mr. Rupert!
Someone's calling you, Gary.
He's been in a hurry.
Well, it's the sheriff. I hope I haven't done anything wrong.
Perhaps he saw you drive, Sheriff.
Mr. Rupert!
Yeah?
Sorry to bother you.
What is it, Sheriff?
Another child's lost. Gone over the cliff at the border trail.
What? Another one?
Yes, sir. Little Dickie Nelson this time.
My good Lord, Sheriff. This is horrible.
Child lost? Is that what you said, Sheriff?
Yes, sir. Fourth in less than 2 weeks.
Lost? Lost how?
On the border trail over cliff there.
Oh, that's awful.
What is this trail, Gary?
Well, it's a narrow pathway along the rim of a high cliff. It washes out so that a slip on the gravel starts a slide right over the cliff.
And you mean to say four boys have been lost there in 2 weeks?
Yes.
Four?
Yes, but doesn't it strike you there might be something more than just fate causing the disappearance of these children?
Well, but what?
That I don't know. Gary, I'd like to look at this.
Look, Mr. Transon. You see how the trail washes out down the cliff?
Yes, Sheriff.
That's 1,000 feet straight down there.
The river at the bottom.
Yeah, I reckon the current must carry the bodies away. We haven't found a trace of them.
I don't suppose there's any doubt about what happened to the boys.
No, Miss Lynn. When Bobby Mina disappeared last week, we found a ball he'd been playing with.
Would you call that conclusive evidence?
Well, this morning we snared up Dickie Nelson's cap that was caught on some shrubbery partway down the mountain.
Mm.
Of course, some of the colored folk around here think Ghost done it.
Ghost?
Yeah. See, they were howling last night about the time Dickie was lost here.
What kind of howling, Sheriff?
Darned if I know, sir. They say they heard it the 3 times the other boys were lost. But you know how they are. Colored folks up here in the hills are superstitious.
Yes. But what kind of a howl does a ghost make in this part of the country, Sheriff?
Well, that's what I asked. About as near they could describe it, it was like a dog howling. A hound dog.
Well, I've generally found that a dog howling means a dog. Perhaps I'd better reverse the usual procedure. The dog trailing a man.
It's all very mysterious, Lamont.
Yes, it is, Margot. Will you excuse me for a moment, Sheriff?
Yes, yeah, certainly, Mr. Cranston.
Margot, I think the shadow will look into this mystery.
But how?
Go back to the house, Margot. I'll wireless you if I need help. In my invisible state as the shadow, I'm going to follow the clue of the dogs and see where it leads me.
Sadie or Jake see you?
No, it's dark in here. But even with a light on, people can't see me because I've learned how to make them think they don't see me. I blind their eyes to me.
How?
Never mind how. You must believe it and don't be afraid of me. I'm your friend.
Yes, sir.
Trust me, Dickie. Perhaps I can find a way to get you and the other boys out of... Quiet. Somebody coming.
Sheriff, yeah. Finds these kids here, they'll hang us, you crazy old fool!
Jake, now don't you touch my baby. He's my Jakey. He's you before you came a hunchback. If you kill him, you'll be killing yourself. He's you, Jake.
You keep away from me. Don't you touch me.
Jake, don't touch that boy.
Who's that?
I heard it, too.
Give me that lamp.
I heard it, too, Jake.
Nobody's in here but us. Us and the kid. He got out.
No, I'm still here.
Voice. Hmm? Ain't nobody with us.
Yeah, I heard it too. Well, that's nothing, Jake. I'm always hearing voices. Yeah, now you're hearing them. Ah, we're both crazy.
Reckon it ain't so crazy a voice can scare me. If I'm crazy like you, then voices ain't real. Now put this kid out of the way, and then I'll get the others.
No, no, stop. Please don't hit me with that stick.
No, Jake.
Put down that stick, Jake. Put it down.
Now. I ain't scared of voices that ain't real.
I said drop it.
Who hit me? Look. Huh? Look at that place on my wrist. Look.
Well, Jake, I've been hearing voices for a long time, but I ain't never been hit by one.
You done it.
Oh, I did not. I wasn't near you.
Then it was the kid.
I never moved.
Well, then who?
I hit you, Jake. Now, I'm going to give you a chance to save yourselves. Let this boy go. Bring the other boys here. I'll take them home.
No, no, they're mine. They're mine. They're Jake. No.
I'll get rid of them my way.
Please help me. I want
to
go home.
Trust me, Dickie. There's only one thing for me to do now. Jake, this is your last chance.
What? Who's that? You reckon it's somebody looking for the kids? If it is...
Jake, it must be them. The Duke and Slim coming to hide out. Listen. Yeah, it's him. Oh, Jake, he'll kill us both if he knows about my babies.
Well, what he don't know won't hurt him. Shut the door to the kids' room and lock it.
Yeah, hurry up, Jake. Let him in. But don't say a word about my baby.
Don't worry. Yeah. Maybe I'm crazy, too, but I ain't that crazy.
Well, what took you so long, Jake?
Hello, Duke.
Come in, Slim. Hurry up. Shut the door.
Okay, Duke.
Yeah, what a dump this is. It's better than being in jail up north. If we didn't have this hideout, that's where you'd be. Hello, old Sadie.
Come in, Duke. Cops after you again?
Shut up. That half-witted old dame talks too much.
Hey, are you staying for a while, Duke?
What's it to you?
I don't care.
Oh, lay off the guy, Slim. Jake, and you too, old Sadie.
Yeah?
We're taking a little rest away from the cops. See? Turn the dogs loose in the yard around the house so they can chew up anybody that comes here looking for us. Go on, Jake. Do it now.
All right, Duke.
Just a minute, Jake.
Who's that? Somebody's in here, Duke.
It's the voice again, Jake. They can't hear it unless they're crazy, too.
That voice again.
Yes, Jake, that same voice. And the Duke can hear it, too. Can't you, Duke?
Say, what's going on here? Who is that?
I tell you, it's in here, Duke.
Who's playing tricks on me?
Duke, did you ever hear of the Shadow?
The Shadow?
I have, Duke. I know, that's the guy that talks to you, but you can't see him.
Shut up, you fool. Yeah, Shadow. I've heard about you. I never believed what I heard, though.
You can believe it now. Listen, Duke. I'm here for only one purpose. To save the lives of four little children.
Oh, don't believe him. It's a lie.
Shut up. I'm handling this. Go ahead, Shadow. Go ahead. Talk some more.
All right. Old Sadie and Jake there have put you in a tough spot.
How, Shadow?
Old Sadie is crazy. She's... well, shall we say... borrowed four little boys from places near here and made it appear that they were killed. Killed falling over a cliff.
Yeah, it's a lie. They was killed. I killed them and my Jake took their place.
Duke, the old dame is back.
Shut up.
Jake here is almost as crazy as his mother, but he wants to kill the boys.
Don't believe him, Duke.
Either way, you'll be arrested for kidnapping.
Hey, Duke, we don't want no part in kidnapping.
Well, Shadow... what's the proposition?
If you let me take the boys away back to their homes, you won't be accused of kidnapping.
And give you a chance to tip off the police to where we're hiding out? Oh, no. Let them have it, Slim.
Look, Duke, the door. He went out the door.
He's gone, Duke. He's gone. We can't get him now.
Oh, yes, we can.
How?
Ah, the dog. If the Shadow's a man, them dogs can follow his scent.
If the Shadow is a man, you mean the dogs will trail him by his scent? Even though we can't see him?
She's right, Duke.
But we haven't got anything to give the dogs to smell, to give them the scent.
Maybe he left something in the kids' room. Let's go and see.
Let's look around here.
He's too clever to have left anything behind.
Hey, where'd the boy get that handkerchief he's sniffling into?
Handkerchief, huh? Yeah. He never had no handkerchief when he come here.
Who gave you this handkerchief, little boy?
A man.
What man?
Man who spoke to me in the dark.
You couldn't see him?
No. He said I had to believe he was here, although I couldn't see him.
Then it's the Shadow's.
Get the dogs. Get the dogs. They can get his scent from that handkerchief and trail him. Thy shadow can't escape this time.
The Shadow's adventure continues in just a moment. Meanwhile, I'd like to say a few words about a subject that's uppermost in everyone's mind these days, how to save money. Large savings in cooking and heating costs can be made by switching to Blue Coal. For Blue Coal is the perfect home fuel. It is the best grade of Pennsylvania anthracite. And anthracite is the fuel that furnaces, cooking stoves, and parlor heaters in New England were designed to use. Blue Coal gives off a steady, clean heat. It lasts longer and burns down to a fine, powdery ash without giving off smoke or grime common to many other fuels. Blue Coal's cleanliness will appeal to New England housewives. For housekeeping is greatly simplified when Blue Coal is used, because with this dependable fuel, you not only have a more comfortable home, but a cleaner house inside and out. These are the reasons why Blue Coal is so popular in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. Sales in Pawtucket this winter are 12% ahead of sales for the same period a year ago. Here's another point. You buy American when buying Blue Coal. It is mined and prepared in Pennsylvania by the Glen Alden Coal Company, especially for home use. So for economy and cleanliness, start using Blue Coal tomorrow. Order it by name. Phone your nearest Blue Coal dealer. You'll find him listed in the Where to Buy It section of your classified telephone directory under the name Blue Coal.
Anymore, trying to lose us among the trees in the dark so he can go back to the house and finish off them kids. Let him have it.
Okay, boss.
I wasn't. Ernest, I wasn't.
Okay. Then come on.
Hey, you, Jake. Ain't those dogs liable to turn on us?
Yeah, if you was alone. Yeah, but I'm with you.
You hear that, Duke? The dogs have got the shadow. It's lucky for us he left his handkerchief with the kids so the hounds could get the scent, ain't it, huh?
Yeah. Now, there's only one or two things for the shadow to do. Stand and be chewed by them beasts, or else climb a tree. He's not invisible to a dog's nose. They can smell him.
If he's climbed a tree, we got him, Duke.
Hey, there's the dog jumping around that tree. Right there. See him?
Well, what do we do now?
Well, we can't do much while it's dark.
What do you mean?
I mean we got to keep the shadow treed until it's daylight.
Yeah, but you can't see him, whether it's light or dark.
That's right. Maybe he's beating us after all.
Listen, if we wait till daylight, then we can see where he is in the tree.
But you can't see where he is.
Yeah, but when he comes, he has to shake the branch he's sitting on. And when we see any of them leaves shaking, we'll shoot right at that place.
It'll be like shooting at nothing.
I know. Hey, if we don't get him that way, he has two other things to choose from.
Yeah, what's that?
We can keep him treed until he gets so weak he can't work his invisibility gag anymore. And he comes down. And then the dogs get him.
Well, there's nothing to do but wait till morning then.
No. But we gotta keep awake. Morning ain't far off. And then we'll see.
Hey, Duke. I got to thinking, sitting here last night. What about them kids?
Well, Slim, what about them?
We didn't do it. But they can't pin a kidnapping rap on us.
Not without evidence, Slim.
No, but you... Oh, I get it. No evidence, huh?
That's right.
No kids.
What do you think?
Yeah. Jake here don't want no evidence either.
As soon as we dispose of the man who calls himself the Shadow, no one will know.
And then Jake here gets rid of the kids.
That's right.
Yeah, but how about Jake and old Sadie?
I think they could disappear and not be missed.
Yeah, that's what I thought. Hey, Doak, look. We can see the whole tree now. But I don't see nobody.
No, of course not. But he's there. Now watch carefully, Slim. There's no wind. Any limb or branch that moves may be the shadow.
Yeah.
So when something moves, let him have it.
I get it. Hey, but how do we know when we get him?
He'll come down, Slim. Now you missed, Slim. Take your time.
Hey, what's that? I thought I saw a branch move. We're shooting at the shadow, Jake.
And when he's unconscious or dead, we can see him all right. And then...
You didn't do so good yourself, Duke.
Those dogs are hungry.
Yeah. I bet they look nice from up in the tree, waiting for their breakfast.
How can you shoot him if you can't see him? Shut up, Jake. Now, take your time, Slim.
Good morning, Duke.
He's there.
Good morning, Shadow.
I hope you slept well.
Oh, yeah. And you?
Now, watch close, Slim.
Yeah, yeah.
Would it be too much for me to ask, how are the little boys?
They're all right, Shadow. So far.
That's good.
Yeah, but I'll get rid of him. Slim, get around the other side of the tree. I think he's low in the tree, behind the trunk.
Okay, Duke.
We're taking care of you first, Shadow. You know too much. Well, what's funny, Shadow?
I'm laughing at you, Duke.
Oh, yeah? You laugh different when I get my hands on you.
Why don't you come up here and try it?
I don't have to. You'll come down.
You'll have a long wait.
Oh, yeah?
Can't you say anything but oh, yeah? You're really quite stupid, Duke.
Oh, yeah? Well, I'm smart enough to get you out of that tree.
Good. I was getting rather bored.
Ah, shut up.
Hey, Slim. Go back to the house and get an axe. This tree ain't too big to cut down.
Very ingenious.
Yeah, but the dogs. It ain't safe to leave without Jake.
The dogs, they won't touch you. They're after the shadow. And Jake will keep them here.
Sure, I'll keep them here, sure.
And hurry back, Slim.
Now, scram.
Okay, Duke. But don't let them dogs come after me.
Jake will keep the dogs here.
Okay, watch it.
Now,
hurry back, Slim. Hey, Jake. Call the dogs off. They're going after Slim.
Yeah, they don't like him.
Hey, call it back. Slim, look out! Jake! The dogs are attacking!
Yeah, they're gonna eat him!
I'll shoot him, Slim!
Guess you didn't shoot him soon enough, Duke.
Well, Jake, your dogs got Slim. I'm afraid you've lost most of them.
Yeah. Ma'll be awful mad. There's only Big Tom left. But the Duke will shoot him.
No, he won't. His gun's empty. Look at him go up that tree.
Yeah. Big Tom didn't get him. Now you're both up in the tree, ain't you?
No, Jake. I'm standing right here behind you. Now do what I tell you. Go over to that tree and tie Big Tom to it. So that the Duke can't get down.
Why should I?
You want to get those kids out of the way, don't you? Duke won't let you.
Yeah. He won't, maybe. Yeah, he won't let me, maybe. Hey, I won't tell him what I'm going to do.
Jake, call off this dog. Tie him up, do you hear me? Tie him up. No, not to my tree, you dope. Take him away. Listen to me. Don't tie him there, you halfwit.
Well, Duke, we change places.
I'll get you if it's the last thing I do, Shadow.
You're going to have plenty to do before we meet again. Jake, come back here.
Yeah.
You'll have plenty of time to think about that.
I don't know, Sheriff. Say, this is the hunchback, Jake. Hello, Jake.
Duke's up in the tree. Yeah, look out, Sheriff.
We got him. Reckon that dog won't attack anyone else.
You killed him.
Now, if our friend will come down out of the tree, I'll be delighted to put a pair of handcuffs onto him. I've been looking for him and his partner for some time. From the looks of things, I won't need to put the cuffs on his partner.
Well, Margo, you'd better go back to the cars.
All right. Yes, I think I will. I only wanted to see if... Yes, I'll go back.
All right, men. Let's take him away.
Margo.
Oh, Lamont. Lamont, are you all right?
Yes, but don't speak my name here.
Darling, I was so frightened when I got your wireless message. I thought it was the end.
So did I. Are the boys all right?
Yes, all the boys are safe. They've been taken into town. A deputy sheriff took old Sadie along. Vicki Nelson is in one of the cars up the road waiting. Oh, Lamont, I feel so sorry for that poor old woman.
So do I, Margot. She's demented. We must see that she's placed in an institution, not a prison. A place where she can satisfy her mother love mania with dolls instead of other people's children. Go to the car, Margot. I'll meet you there.
What are we waiting for, Miss Lane? I want to go home to my mother.
Just a minute, Dickie. I'm expecting someone.
Who?
Oh, here he comes now.
Hello, Margot.
Hello, Lamont.
Who is this young man?
This is Dickie Nelson. Dickie, Lamont Cranston.
Hello, Mr. Cranston.
Well, Dickie, I hear you had quite an adventure last night.
Yes. A kind man came to my room at that terrible house. But I couldn't see him.
Maybe you dreamt it, Dickie. Supposing we keep it a secret. Just between us three.
Yes, I think that's a good idea.
All right. But it was a swell dream.
And here is John Barclay, Blue Coal's heating expert, with some interesting information for you.
Thank you, Ken Roberts. Good evening, friends. The health and comfort of your family during this period of widely varying temperatures depends to a great extent on whether your heating plant delivers steady, even heat when you need it. And the efficiency of your heating plant depends upon the proper use of furnace dampers. Here are some helpful hints on the proper use of these dampers. First, the turn or the smoke pipe damper should never be used for day-to-day control of heat. This damper should always be kept as nearly closed as possible without retarding the free burning of your fire. If you do not have automatic thermostat control of your furnace, the everyday control of heat should be left to your check damper, that flap-like damper located on your chimney pipe and the ash pipe damper. To get more heat through your house, close the check damper and open the ash pit damper. Always remember, when one is closed, the other should be open. If the house is warm enough, close the ash pit and open the check damper. The proper location of these dampers is important. The check damper should be between the chimney and turn damper, the latter being between the check damper and the furnace. If the dampers are in this position, they are properly placed. And if operated in the manner that I have just explained, you should not experience any trouble in maintaining an even temperature in all parts of your home. However, if you do have trouble with your furnace, phone your nearest Blue Coal dealer and ask him to send a John Barclay serviceman to your home. I thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Barclay. And friends, take Mr. Barclay's tip. Phone your nearest Blue Coal dealer. Have him send a John Barclay serviceman to your home tomorrow. You have just heard a dramatized version of one of the many copyrighted stories which appear in the Shadow magazine. All the characters and all the places named are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental.
As you sow evil, so shall you reap. Evil. Crime does not pay. A shadow knows.